Our goal at IDEAS is to broaden U.S. higher education institutions' capacity to develop study abroad programs, increase the number of all students studying abroad, including those from historically underrepresented groups. We want to increase the number of U.S. higher education institutions offering study abroad programs. And we want to expand study abroad safely to new overseas destinations.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of World Strides Podcast, Changing Lives Through Education Abroad, a weekly series of conversations with international education's most interesting thought leaders, as well as discussions on emerging trends, best practices, and innovation happening in our field. I'm your host, Zach McInnes, and I am so excited about this week's episode. We have a very special conversation planned for our listeners today. We're talking capacity building for education abroad. More specifically, we'll be taking a deep dive into the U.S. Department of State Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs IDEAS program. The IDEAS program aims to increase and diversify education abroad for students in support of U.S. foreign policy goals. The IDEAS program supports the notion that our next generation of leaders, American students of all backgrounds, engage internationally to foster mutual understanding and develop critical skills in support of U.S. national security and economic competitiveness. I know that's an idea our listeners can get behind. The program aims to expand the institutional capacity of U.S. colleges and universities to broaden, expand, and enhance study abroad for U.S. students. The IDEAS grant competition assists U.S. colleges and universities in creating and/or expanding their study abroad programming through the issuance of $35,000 grants. That's right, folks, $35,000. The IDEAS program is a program of the U.S. Department of State with funding provided by the U.S. government and supported in its implementation by World Learning. I can't imagine a better person to guide us on this journey today than my dear friend, Rachel Rice. Rachel is the program manager at World Learning and oversees the implementation of the IDEAS program. I've known Rachel for over 10 years, and I have loved watching her thrive in this space since she joined World Learning in the fall of 2020. If you're interested in creative ways to expand capacity for education abroad in 2024, you do not want to miss this episode, my friends. Stay tuned for what's sure to be a fabulous conversation. Welcome, Rachel. I am so looking forward to our conversation today. To begin, could you please tell us a bit about your professional journey and how you came to be managing the implementation of the IDEAS program?
Thank you so much, Zach. Thank you for having me today. I'm so excited for this conversation. My professional journey started where it did for many of us. I studied abroad as an undergrad, and this was really critical for me. I was a first-gen college student from a rural background on a ton of financial aid, and I was lucky enough to go to a college with really positive financial aid transfer policies. So I was able to study abroad for a whole year, and that's where I got the bug. And so I worked at colleges and universities in the New York City area for about 6 years. I dabbled a little bit in international student services, but my heart was really in education abroad. So I transitioned to a provider, which is where I met you, Zach. We met on the road and I've stayed in touch since. And I was there for about 6 years and then COVID. And again, like what happened to so many of us, I got laid off. I lost my job. And I thought, well, that's it. That's my career in study abroad, because who finds a job in study abroad in the middle of a global pandemic? And then incredibly, 6 months later, I saw this job posting at World Learning. I happened to know the hiring manager from a previous role. I applied, and the rest is history.
I saw on your LinkedIn that you started this position in fall of 2020, so I had to call that out in the intro. So thank you for sharing that, Rachel. For our listeners who may not yet be familiar, could you please give us an overview of the IDEAS program and its goals?
Yes, and you already did a great intro, but just to dive in a little bit more, IDEAS is a program of the U.S. Department of State and specifically the Educational and Cultural Affairs Bureau, and then the USA Study Abroad branch within that. Many of your listeners are probably familiar with USA Study Abroad through the Gilman Scholarship and the Critical Language Scholarship. Same office, same folks. but Gilman and CLS focus on students and we focus on institutions at Ideas. Our goal at Ideas is to broaden U.S. higher education institutions' capacity to develop study abroad programs for U.S. students. We have three goals under that overarching goal. We aim to increase the number of all students studying abroad, including those from historically underrepresented groups. We want to increase the number of U.S. higher education institutions offering study abroad programs. And we want to expand study abroad safely to new overseas destinations, particularly those that are less common. We achieve these goals in two ways. One is through an annual small grants competition. We award approximately 35 grants a year of up to $35,000 each and approximately one consortium grant of up to $50,000. So that's groups of colleges and universities who work together on a project. And all of these grant applications have to address at least one or more foreign policy goals, which we'll get into later. But this is really, really important for our country and also important for framing the value of study abroad. So that's a small grants competition. And the second way we do this is through capacity building initiatives. These are trainings. They're virtual and in person, totally free, open to everyone. And for the ones that are in person, we are able to offer some travel support financially to make sure that travel costs are not a burden for people attending.
I would love to dig a bit deeper here. I know the Ideas program is funded by the State Department, but implemented by World Learning. What does that mean exactly?
That's a great question. I spend a lot of time explaining this to colleagues in the field because it's not something that a lot of study abroad office folks are really aware of. This is 100% an ECA program funded by the U.S. government through an annual appropriation from Congress. And the implementation of this program is openly competed every 3 years. So every 3 years, a notice goes out saying that, you know, any implementing partner, there are many others in addition to World Learning, can submit a proposal to have the honor of implementing this program. The funding, the goals, the structure of the program, that all comes from ECA. We as implementers work out the details in conjunction with ECA to ensure those goals are reached. So when someone emails ideas@worldlearning.org, they're reaching our team at World Learning, not the State Department.
The Ideas program aims to increase and diversify study abroad through two main components, the administration of small grants and the implementation of capacity building initiative for the U.S. higher education community. Could you break down those big categories for us a bit and perhaps give an example of each?
These two components each aim to build capacity, but one is a very targeted, in-depth approach to build capacity at specific institutions, and the other is a broader approach that can benefit any and all U.S. institutions. So through small grants, we work intensely with dozens of institutions each year to develop and implement new programs, resources, and partnerships that are meaningful for that specific institution. And then, through public webinars and workshops, which again are always free, anyone in the field can access timely, relevant, and quality trainings on a variety of topics, from risk management to conducting outreach to first-generation students. And just to be super clear, at the Ideas program, we work directly with faculty, staff, and institutional leaders, not students. I love talking to students, but I have not talked to a single student or parent since starting this role.
Tell me a bit more about World Learning. What is World Learning and what other programs do you implement?
You know, Zach, World Learning is a really interesting organization. I've been here 3.5 years and I'm still learning about it. So World Learning was founded in 1932 as the experiment in international living, and it's grown and changed over the last 90 plus years to become a truly global organization with projects and offices in the US and all over the world. You and our listeners probably know World Learning as the umbrella organization over SAT Study Abroad and the SAT Graduate Institute. That side of the organization is based in Vermont, but I actually work for the NGO side of the organization, which is based in Washington, D.C. In addition to Ideas, we implement many other U.S. government programs. Some of you may have heard of the Global UGrad program, the Fulbright Specialist program, the International Visitor Leadership program, and so many more, I couldn't even begin to list them all. And fun fact, I actually first started working with World Learning years ago when I worked at Barnard College, and we hosted global UGrad students on our campus every year. And now I work with my global UGrad colleagues every day.
Talk about a full circle moment. Thanks for sharing that, Rachel. We're talking about a small grant as one of the primary ways this grant can be awarded. But we know that sometimes even a small project that's carefully thought out can really inject energy that spreads across and beyond a campus. In other words, Rachel, how can a small grant have a big impact?
It's truly one of the things that brings me back to my desk every day to see the ripple effects that these grants can have across campuses and local communities. I'll give you one example. Western Kentucky University, their Ideas Grant project was called Counties to Countries, and they had a focus on rural students. Kentucky has one of the lowest study abroad rates in the country, and my home state of West Virginia has the lowest. So this project was particularly dear to me. So at WKU, Western Kentucky University, 88% of their students come from Kentucky or Tennessee, and most students are from rural areas. Students from rural areas of all races and ethnicities had the lowest study abroad participation rate of any WKU campus population. And so they really wanted to focus on these students for their Ideas project, because for rural students who do study abroad, their five-year graduation rates are three times those who do not. We know study abroad is a high impact practice, but they've actually done research on their campus to quantify this for their specific rural population. With their Ideas project, they developed two new short-term faculty-led programs to less common destinations, Costa Rica and Senegal. And then they added this to an already existing program to Ireland that they had. And in summer 2023, they sent 43 students abroad, most of them who identified as coming from rural backgrounds. And in addition to this, to speak to the ripple effects, WKU received over $200,000 in additional funding from the Kentucky Innovative Scholarship Pilot Program called Kentucky Scholarships for Cultural Exchange. And a lot of those funds went to these students on these Counties to Countries programs to fund their participation in study abroad.
Increasing access to education abroad for rural students is an issue that I care about as well. And I really appreciate you lifting up that story. And one of the reasons why the Ideas program is so important is that it has a focus on expanding access to study abroad. How have you seen a grant increase access and open doors for students?
Expanding access is so important. And as a first-generation student myself, this is really important to me personally. I saw the benefit to me personally when I was an undergrad, and this is a driving reason why I entered the field. Study abroad changes lives, as the title of your podcast says. So at Ideas, we aim to increase study abroad representation among all underrepresented student groups. First generation, male, rural, community college students, those in underrepresented majors. For example, this year, the Ideas program was able to support the bipartisan CHIPS and Science Act. As we know, many STEM and technical majors are underrepresented abroad. And so this past September, we offered a webinar on creative ways to integrate study abroad into the STEM curriculum. And in this year's grant competition, we anticipate awarding a grant to a consortium of schools, including at least one community college, to develop programs and resources that will prepare students for careers in STEM, technical, and/or vocational fields. And I know we mentioned foreign policy goals a few moments ago. We'll get into it more later. But this initiative is in direct support of the technology and innovation foreign policy goal.
I just want to stay on this topic for another few moments. I'd love to lift up that the Ideas program has done some truly intentional work in partnership with minority-serving institutions, MSIs, historically Black colleges and universities, HBCUs, and of course, rural-serving institutions to help make study abroad within the reach of more students. What would you like to share, either in terms of the values and goals of the program or a success you'd like to highlight?
Thank you for recognizing that, Zach. We do a lot of outreach to minority-serving institutions, and we are so proud that about 40% of our grantees are MSIs. That's double the national percentage of 20%. It's so important that our students studying abroad and their home institutions reflect the full range of backgrounds, identities, and geographies of our country. And just like we as people have intersecting identities, So do institutions. They may hold multiple MSI statuses, be classified as a technical or community college, identify with their geographic location, and every possible combination therein. And as we both know from our years working in institutional relations, every single campus is unique. There is not a one-size-fits-all model. So when I think about successes, I think about it in the context of each individual campus. There are so many examples of unique grantee projects, successes, and challenges. One grantee that I personally work with is Bennett College. They're a small women's HBCU in North Carolina. And the goal of their grant is to increase the number of HBCU faculty leading programs abroad. This project aims to increase study abroad at HBCUs more generally, and also specifically to increase the number of Black women studying environmental issues abroad. There are so many underrepresented categories included there, and I think it's a really creative approach to an issue that is meaningful to them at Bennett and also broadly applicable to all students at HBCUs.
I love what you said in particular about no two campuses being alike. I was talking to one of our newer colleagues who has entered the wonderful world of institutional relations, and sometimes I like to compare universities to snowflakes in that no two are alike. So thank you for lifting that up. For our listeners who are inspired to consider pursuing one of these awards, Rachel, I would love it if you could pull back the curtain for us just a bit. Could you speak to what would make a compelling application and how practitioners could position their institution for success?
First, I just want to be super clear that the application deadline for the current grant competition has passed, and the next one has not yet been announced. So pending the availability of funding, it is slated to open in fall 2024. So please do sign up to receive our emails so you're sure to see any relevant announcements. You can do that at studyabroadcapacitybuilding.org. And I promise we won't spam you. I always say to applicants, when you're writing your application, answer these questions. Why this project? Why my institution? And why now? And if you have compelling responses to these questions, have at least some institutional support behind you, and can thoughtfully tie your project to one or more foreign policy goals, that will make a strong application.
Applying for something like this can feel intimidating. What are some of the resources that are available to our listeners, and how is the application itself structured?
I totally hear that, Zach, and you could not find a more supportive and responsive team than IDEAS. So every training that we offer, we record with ASL interpretation and post on our website. We walk you through everything from developing your budget to aligning your project with a foreign policy goal. And we often ask current and former grantees to speak on webinars and offer their own advice. In terms of structure, a few years ago, we moved to a two-phase application. This was done to allow more access to applications from a broader range of U.S. colleges and universities, including those without robust grant writing offices. Not every university has a sponsored programs office, or even if they do, they may not be able to support all grant applications. In the first phase, this is a concept phase, and it's only 750 words. So it's a really low stakes exercise that's accessible to any institution. Those applications are reviewed by a panel of volunteer peer reviewers, and the strongest applications move on to phase two and submit a full proposal, which is about 15 pages plus a few attachments, like a budget, calendar of activities, et cetera. That full proposal is once again peer-reviewed, and reviewers then come together to discuss applications during live virtual panels. These panel discussions ultimately lead to a recommended list of grantees, which is then approved by ECA for funding. I'm oversimplifying greatly. It's a lot more complicated than that, but in a nutshell, that's how it works. And speaking of volunteer reviewers, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that this is a great professional development opportunity for anyone who is interested. Many reviewers say they learned so much and leave the process feeling inspired about their work with new ideas for their own campus.
Could you please speak to us a bit about eligibility, the types of institutions that you all work with, and what kind of programs are supported?
We welcome applications from all 50 states and U.S. territories. An institution must be accredited, and the proposed project must primarily impact undergraduate students. All institutional types are welcome: public, private, two-year, four-year, minority-serving institutions at non-MSIs, rural, urban, and everything in between. Every institution has room to grow, and there are brilliant ideas just waiting to be funded in every single study abroad office. Even if your idea is to create a study abroad office, and we've done that too. The most common project type we see is developing new short-term programs, usually faculty-led. We also see some great resource development projects, faculty staff training, student ambassador programs, some really unique and inventive virtual programs, and so much more. I am constantly impressed by the creativity of these applications.
All institutions applying for an ideas grant must substantively address one or more U.S. foreign policy goals through their program activities. There are a number of these, and they are spelled out, of course, on your website, but I would love to hear your take on why these are critical and how listeners and applicants should be keeping them in mind when planning on an application.
So, study abroad is a form of public diplomacy. When American students study abroad, they're citizen ambassadors, and it's important that students, faculty, staff, and institutional leadership see the connections between what students are experiencing and studying abroad and how that relates to U.S. foreign policy interests, which often are also local interests, including economic development and public health. If the professionals leading these programs can thoughtfully and intentionally help students make these connections with the larger global picture, everyone benefits: the students, the host communities, and their local U.S. communities as well.
And here at the pod, we always enjoy ourselves a success story. Rachel, is there a grantee project that has you inspired?
Oh, if I had to pick just one, I would like to lift up a community college out in Washington State who did some really amazing work with COIL. Just in case anyone's unfamiliar with that acronym, Collaborative Online International Learning. Green River College is a two-year institution who is also an Anapisi. And for their ideas grant, they developed a COIL Training Academy. So originally, this was meant to invite educators from just Washington State to participate and receive intensive training on developing and incorporating COIL into the curriculum. But they actually ended up opening the program up beyond the state and also welcomed international participants who were matched up with the U.S. counterparts. And as a result, 24 faculty from 6 countries and 13 academic disciplines worked together for about a year and developed 10 new COIL courses that have been successfully offered at their institutions. Now, 10 new courses, if you assume a minimum enrollment of just 10 students a course, that's 100 students, and there were probably more. This is an incredible example of a ripple effect and an example of how a relatively small grant can have a large impact, not only on the campus receiving the grant, but on other U.S. and international institutions as well.
One of the things we talk about in our field is campus internationalization. How have you seen an ideas grant contribute to this type of goal?
So one piece of advice I always give to grantees is reach across the quad. I think some of the most successful grants I've seen have involved other campus administrative offices, creating study abroad champions all over campus. One institution I always think of is New Mexico State University. They did an incredible job at this. So instead of hiring new study abroad staff, which they may not have had the funding for, they instead cross-trained all of their academic advisors on study abroad advising. This model was so successful, it actually expanded other campus offices, TRIO student services, multicultural student services, and a few other offices on campus. And now there are multiple places on campus where students can hear about study abroad. They don't have to seek out study abroad advising. It meets them where they are.
Another thing the Ideas program does is workshops. Could you tell us a bit more about those?
We are just about to announce our next round of workshop hosts and topics, so this is perfect timing. And every year we offer 1 to 3 virtual or in-person workshops. Again, all free and open to attendees from all U.S. institutions. And again, for those in-person workshops, we do offer some financial travel support. These workshops include 8 to 10 hours of content and offer training on a variety of topics, from assessment and evaluation to best practices for faculty-led programming. In September of 2023, we offered a workshop on recruiting and supporting underrepresented students at Miami-Dade College, which is a two-year institution in Florida. We welcomed over 50 faculty and staff from around the country. And if you weren't able to attend, not to worry, the resources, slides, and recordings are all available in our library of resources at studyabroadcapacitybuilding.org. Bookmark it.
I echo the advice to bookmark that website. That's studyabroadcapacitybuilding.org. Rachel, in your role, you've got a 30,000-foot view of U.S. study abroad. What are the trends that you are seeing, and how have things changed from, say, 5 years ago?
This is one of my favorite things about this role. Mind you, 5 years ago, I had more of a 10,000-foot view, so my perspective has changed somewhat. When I was working at a provider, I didn't work with any community colleges, for example, and now I work with dozens. A trend that has continued, and the data confirms this, is more students choosing shorter and shorter term programs. From an accessibility point of view, this is wonderful. This means programs are more affordable, and more students can go abroad without taking time away from work or family responsibilities. Another trend I'm seeing is really creative and effective integration of technology. This is the thing we were all forced to do in 2020, but we learned a lot. And now I'm seeing so many schools choose to make this a critical part of their wider education abroad strategy, not to replace in-person opportunities, but to supplement them. When done thoughtfully, I think using virtual program components in conjunction with in-person ones can maximize student learning. And then at the leadership level, you know, we're seeing a lot of thoughtful discussions about sustainability in terms of the environment, the impact of study abroad on the environment. We have the Forum on Education Abroad's guidance on how to incorporate the UN Sustainable Development Goals into study abroad programming. And there are some hard truths to consider here, but we owe it to ourselves as a field to critically discuss these topics.
If our listeners only take one thing away about the IDEAS program after today's episode, what would you like that to be?
The IDEAS program offers something for everyone, no matter your current role or the current capacity of your institution. If this is the first time you're hearing about us, sign up on our website or give us a follow on LinkedIn and join us at our next webinar to see what we're all about.
Rachel, it's hopes and dreams time, my favorite time. What are you excited about when you think about what is coming down the pike for the IDEAS program?
So I mentioned earlier that we are in the midst of this year's grant competition, and I'm really excited about this year's applications. We see so many creative ideas that really have potential to make a lasting impact on campuses, students, and U.S. communities. I'm excited to see which applications are strongest and successfully become grantees. So look for that announcement sometime in June.
I just have one more question for you today, my friend. As you contemplate education abroad in 2024, what makes you hopeful?
You know, Zach, a lot has changed in the field over the last few years. I don't have to tell you that. But one thing that hasn't is that study abroad folks are truly amazing, creative, kind, and passionate, my absolute favorite people. And when I read my grantees' reports or catch up with colleagues at a conference, I can't help but be hopeful because these folks are doing so much good on their campuses and organizations, and I'm just so grateful to get to be a small part of it.
Rachel Rice, this has been such an inspiring conversation. Thanks to you and to all of your colleagues for all that you do to support our field. I can't thank you enough for being here.
Thank you, Zach. Thanks for giving us this opportunity to spread the good word about IDEAS.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode of Changing Lives Through Education Abroad. I'm your host, Zach McInnes, and please make sure to join us next week as we continue to explore topics around international education and exchange. Thank you to my spectacular World Strides colleagues, Lindsay Kelcher and Sarah Kachuba, without whom this podcast would not be possible. Please subscribe to Changing Lives Through Education Abroad on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. And share with your friends and colleagues. Let's create life-changing moments together.